Welcome to Iowa Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. How are you, my friends? Thanks for tuning in. This is episode 89 of the podcast. If you're a new listener, I want to welcome you. Iowa Health is your place for trusted health guidance and resource. If you're looking to improve your health or just seeking tips to stay well, we're here for you. This is a growing community on a mission to improve our experience together. You can listen to our entire back catalog of seasons over at highway2.health. That's highwayto.health. And while you're there, check out the Highway to Health Journal for more from the most brilliant and innovative minds in the world of health. And if you'd like to become more connected and keep up with everything that we've got going on, sign up for our monthly newsletter for a dose of love delivered right to your inbox. We promise to respect your time and will only send you things that add value to your life. I'm so excited to get this conversation going here with Luke and Allie Peterson of Peterson Farms, a regenerative farm in Dawson, Minnesota. This is Luke's second time on the show, so if you missed the first one, that's episode 18 of season 2, where we discussed his background a bit more. We go on a little deeper dive into the practice of regenerative farming in this one and discussed a couple of documentaries that have come up recently, bringing more attention to the regenerative farming movement and how it may be the key to preventing a climate crisis. And Allie Peterson joins us. Besides being a part of the farm business, she's also a nurse practitioner and brings valuable insight into the correlation of soil health and our physical health. Every time I talk to these two, I feel incredibly inspired, and I think that you will be too. Here's my conversation with Luke and Allie Peterson. Welcome back to the podcast, Luke and Allie. Nice to have you on as well. The dynamic duo, husband and wife team here. I thought it'd be great to bring you guys both into the conversation since we've had these conversations a little bit over the years. And because of some stuff that's been becoming more public about regenerative farming, I wanted to kind of get a little deeper into that conversation and really kind of talk about where, you know, what your thinking is at this point, how your, you know, really how your careers and how your work is, how you're formulating what you want to be doing with the kind of health projects that you're involved in. And I got into watching this Netflix documentary, Kiss the Ground, and I totally remembered, you know, conversations that we had had. And I thought, you know, this needs to kind of get pushed out there more. Maybe we can promote the film in that way, and maybe we can talk about some of that a little bit more. So for people who don't know much about regenerative farming, where do you start having this conversation with people, Luke?
It's such a broad topic. It is kind of a hard conversation to start. But I think overall, I think the place to start would be with people. It's a farming system that involves people. And that means eyes to acre ratios, so there's more farmers back on the land instead of less. And if they have if we have more farmers on the land and not less of them, we will be able to do a better job of taking care of the land.
Yeah. And ultimately that's the land and the soil, you know, this topsoil layer that has become problematic for farmers, right?
Like the topsoil.
The health of the soil itself.
Yeah, the health of the soil is deteriorating. There is no question about it. And the difference between sustainable farming and regenerative farming is that regenerative farming is regenerating the soil instead of just sustaining its current place.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. So since in the 3 years since we had our conversation for the podcast, you were just about to start getting animals because that was kind of a crucial part, right, for what you needed to do?
Yeah, livestock 3 years ago was kind of my missing piece. And we've started our own small grass-fed beef herd, starting with low-lying Angus. They were bred in Australia over like the last 60 years to finish well on forage. So like this line, they don't need to be fed grain in order to gain weight.
Okay.
So we'll be grazing our cover crops with them, and then we have permanent pasture that we'll be grazing, and we also are introducing pasture into our rotation. So we're actually becoming grass farmers in row crop country. So that'll be a new thing that we're going to start next summer. We'll be planting that grass following this year's small grain crop, and it'll come up after next winter, and we'll start our rotational grazing system.
So what's the reason for the grass?
So we can introduce more perennials.
Okay.
And the grass is just kind of, you know, the perennial grass system. It kind of covers all five principles of soil health all in one shot.
Gotcha.
So, and if you think back to our natural ecosystem, I live in prairie country. So yeah. So we're kind of resorting back to how it just naturally would have been.
Yeah. And as far as what needed to happen, you know, if you're obviously looking at the land that you're using, what is it about that land that needed regenerating?
Well, over the years of intensive corn and soybean farming, the soil is starting to lose its organic matter. It's just been used for monoculture cropping. So okay. It's been one species each year and, you know, for the sake of production. So get as many bushels off it as you can each year.
Okay.
And we're kind of moving away from that model and trying to, you know, have more of a diverse crop rotation. This next year, we'll be planting up to 12 different crops, introducing cover crops. So we'll be planting cover crops after our annual crops. We've eliminated fall tillage, and then we've introduced the livestock, and we're going to be introducing more perennials like pasture and kernza.
Okay. And the reason, this is one of the things that I was kind of picking up from watching this documentary, is I didn't realize what happens with tillage, you know, it was interesting. I don't know how much you know about my field, but I do a lot of work with fascia. So Ali probably knows a little bit more about this, but fascia is like this sort of network of this connective tissue network that's enervated, but it kind of like holds together the whole structure. And as I'm watching this documentary, they're talking about the glomulin. And about this sort of network that's, I don't know how, maybe what, 10, 12 inches or something below the top of the soil, right? That is basically sort of creating this same kind of network for you know, moisture and fluid to kind of, you know, rainwater to kind of move through. It's a place that traps the carbon, right? And that's kind of what creates the growth, right? And so they're talking about the tilling. All of a sudden, you know, I'm thinking about the same kinds of things that we do to our bodies, you know, just from that surface that cause some of the same problems. So do you guys think it's sort of similar to that in some ways?
Absolutely. I think like the mycorrhizal fungi and the whole network that exists below the soil that we can't really see, you know, with the naked eye, that just promotes all of the life under the soil. It definitely correlates with the fascia system in the human body. I just think that that's a really great analogy in comparison. I had not thought of that, but that's awesome.
Yeah. I feel like it's also sort of like the gut in some ways, because you have all these microbes that are sort of, you know, that have this place, and it's really those microbes that go into the food that go into our gut, you know? So I just kept seeing all these correlations.
Exactly. I thought that was the correlation that I had made. Two was just how like the microbes in the soil, they take care of breaking down all the plant matter. And, you know, if there is livestock on the land, they break down all of the manure, all of the dead growth, and break it down into nutrients in the soil. And then the plants that we eat use those nutrients. And then when we eat the food, it isn't even us so much that eats the food as it is our gut bacteria.
Right.
And so we eat what our gut bacteria processes.
Yeah.
And so that definitely, like, that was eye-opening.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's and for anybody who I haven't introduced you yet completely, Allie, but you're a nurse practitioner, correct?
Right,
and,
yes.
And how long have you been doing this? I forget.
My trajectory, I've been a nurse practitioner since 2016, a nurse since 2011.
Yeah.
And all through high school, I worked as a nurse's aide in a nursing home. And so, yeah, I've kind of been around healthcare my whole life.
Yeah, that's what I thought. From that perspective, I guess, you know, in terms of regenerative farming, I couldn't help but sort of see the correlation from the last time that we talked. I couldn't get it out of my head about how, you know, basically if we get into like the soil science and what needs to be in that soil in terms of the chemical composition, in terms of the fungi and the bacteria, those are all the things that are basically keeping us well too. And there's this, you know, I think Luke, you did a great job explaining this so far. I'm not going to go so deep into this time, but for anybody who wants to know more, go back to listen to our earlier episode. But you talked about a lot about how, you know, there's this ecosystem that's going on between the bugs, the stuff that's growing, and that, you know, using pesticides was a way of managing bugs, but that there's a natural way of actually doing this. And some of that has to do with like the cover crops that you grow and that kind of stuff too, right?
Yeah, I would say, just to put a broad blanket over everything, is that the more diversity that I can bring to my farm, the better. Mm-hmm. The more plant diversity that I bring, I'll include different bugs. And different bugs are beneficial bugs. For every pest that I will run into on the farm, there are 1,500 beneficial bugs that will destroy that pest. So instead of spraying a pesticide to eliminate my pest issue, what I'll do is I'll just plant the right crops that'll bring in the right insects to kind of take care of that for me.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I thought it was interesting in the documentary, they talked about sort of what happened in agriculture post-World War II, and how they turned bugs into the enemy, the war on bugs, as they called it. that there was this you know, feeling that if they could destroy all the bugs, they could speed up, you know, production or increase crop or whatever it is that they're trying to do. But as we're learning, you know, basically that has backfired on us, and yet there's still a mechanism in place. And I know this is a bit of a dangerous topic, but it basically where the funding is coming from for the farmers is from subsidy at this point. And is that really what's kind of holding back, do you think, the push towards more regenerative work with the soil?
I think the subsidies are one of the biggest challenges that farmers face.
Okay.
Because they're given out to everybody, and if you don't take them, your neighbor will, and he'll outcompete you for the next farm that comes up for sale or the next farm that comes up for rent. So if you don't take them, you pretty much just aren't competitive anymore as far as getting access to land. So it definitely leads farmers down a simplified path, and that is to produce as much as you can, as fast as you can. To get away from that model is a challenge, because it's hard to compete financially. If you're not meeting the revenue of some of those crops that are subsidized.
Yeah. So are there any, are there cooperatives now, or is there any way for regenerative farmers to kind of start working together to change that model?
I wouldn't say that there's any direct group or cooperative that you can really get involved with. What Allie and I have done kind of since we started was kind of just making a brand for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going out and asking the market, what will you buy from us? We've been going out and asking, what can we grow for you? And if that makes any
sense. Yeah, yeah. So you go directly to the businesses right. that need the products.
Right. Right now, you know, in our local community, we can sell corn and soybeans.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that rotation will never meet our standards as a farm as far as where we want to be. So we would reach out to companies, and we've been asked from different companies if we would grow crops for them. And just to give you an example, is a company like Seven Sundays in Minneapolis. They reached out to us and asked if we would grow buckwheat for them. Buckwheat is a huge deal in our rotation because it cycles phosphorus really well.
Okay.
And like the less dependent we can be on outside sources of fertility, the better off that we're going to be.
Okay.
And it also, you know, is another home for all these beneficial bugs. Once I bring in a plant like that flowers, it just teems with insects. Like the field is literally buzzing. It is alive and yeah. vibrant. But it's what I've noticed with crops like alfalfa and the clovers and the buckwheats is that once I bring in those bugs, the whole chain like comes alive, and it goes from the little bugs up to the pollinators and then the dragonflies, and then the birds are chasing the dragonflies around the field. And then from there, like the pheasants come in and
the frogs
are there eating the bugs. Wow. And it's just like
and the deer and the wildlife is just,
but it's all because I was able to plant an alternative crop. And these, buckwheat doesn't yield a lot, and that's probably why it's been outcompeted by something like corn.
Yeah.
But our farm has moved in the direction of selling ingredients.
Right.
So we will get it processed, and then we sell food, and we try to sell it as local as possible.
Okay.
And when it comes to buckwheat, like, it's not only so beneficial for, like, our farm, but for people, that really can't tolerate gluten very well, buckwheat is such a nice alternative to be able to have. And so,
And I think that's essential right now. I mean, it's one of those things that also became subsidized, right? And why there's so much, and why I think sometimes we end up with these corn and gluten issues, and is that we're sort of overwhelming our system's ability to process some of this stuff. We should be eating more diversely as well, right?
Yeah.
And if I can diversify my farm, I can help diversify everybody's diet.
Yeah.
And it's such a complex issue, but what I need is a market.
Yeah. So how is let's take this buckwheat example. So how lucrative is that in comparison to if you were, doing soybeans and corn?
It doesn't bring the revenue of corn and soybeans.
Okay.
But I look at it through the lens of the non-cash benefits that I'm receiving from growing buckwheat.
Okay.
And what I kind of meant by the phosphorus is, that cycles phosphorus really well through my soil and makes it available for the next crop. So I can buy less phosphorus the next year for the next crop.
So that fertilizer cost is brought down.
Right. Yeah. So it's the non-cash benefits, and it's the tilth of the soil.
Yeah.
After planting buckwheat, the tilth of the soil is incredible. And then that makes it easier for me when I do my weed management. The soil flows nicely over my shovels, and I can cover up the weeds within the row for like my bean crop.
Okay.
So it's just so many different things. And then like bringing in those insects, I'll have less of an aphid issue in that bean crop the next year.
Gotcha.
So,
and another nice thing about buckwheat is that you can follow it with like a cover crop, or even like a winter wheat or kernza could be planted after buckwheat. So that, because buckwheat is harvested, I think this last year it was like mid-August. Mm-hmm. And so there's still part of the fall growing, end of summer into fall growing season that's left for plants to like establish and get a root system started so that the soil is covered over winter and it isn't left.
So it gives you, so you can actually add another, season of something by planting that way, right?
Yep, which adds to the diversity.
Yeah,
Yep, and buckwheat is just one example. Each crop has its place in the rotation, and they each do something for the crop that follows it.
Okay. And so what's changed with, I know you took on this, much bigger acreage, right, since... that was just starting the last time I talked to you. So how many acres are you farming now?
I think when we talked 3 years ago, I was farming 80 acres.
That's right.
Yeah, in 2021, we'll be farming 750 acres.
Wow.
So it'll be good because we've learned how to, you know, spread out our workload.
Yeah.
Introducing these other perennials, I'm not in those fields as much as my row crops.
Okay.
And then I need the acreage to support like the livestock, and as far as like where I want to be one day with livestock, things like that. So it provides more of a rest period for farms in that rotation if I add more acres to it.
Okay. And what would be the ideal, you know, number of livestock then to have on hand for that amount of acres?
It would take a lot. Like plants feed the soil on their own with the rotation. Kind of like with the buckwheat, like we talked, or like peas would contribute and add nitrogen.
Yeah.
And you can do it with plants. And I am still sourcing fertility from off the farm to replace the grain that I'm selling. But it would take a considerable amount of livestock. And that's just going to take us time. And once again, it's going to take a market. Like currently, livestock are not profitable on a small scale.
Yeah.
Just because of the infrastructure that it takes. It takes fencing, water lines, waters, the infrastructure just kind of really outweighs what you can profitably make on livestock. And, you know, that's kind of why it's, you know, everything's being pushed into the confinement model. Is you can put a lot of animals in a small space.
Right.
And
that's where profitability lies.
Is in numbers.
In the numbers, yeah.
In the numbers and the like how much time that you spend managing.
Right.
Those yeah. animals. And in our system, you know, we want to like move the cattle each day and we want to graze them on our crop and things like that, which takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so in order to move, I can't give you like an exact number. It really depends on your rotation and stuff, but it would take a lot more than we have now. Okay. And we'll keep growing those numbers as fast as the market will buy the product from us.
Gotcha. I mean, that was the one thing that was, I think, made very clear in that documentary was that, you know, these plain states, you know, had about 60 million, you know, buffalo before, you know, we came in and moved things or killed so many of them. I mean, I think that was part of what was going on with the early settlers is they knew that the native people here were dependent on the resource of the buffalo. And that was one way to basically sort of move them out of places, I think, right? And now we're down to a few thousand buffalo, I think, you know, on the continent. So it just goes to show what that was doing for the land to have those animals in there. And, you know, another part that, you know, I think that really was driven home for me was this balance between that topsoil, the quality of that topsoil, what's growing, and then the transpiration, you know, of water moving through the plant into the atmosphere rather than the carbon just being lost right out of the soil, and what that does for the environment itself, you know, in terms of, you know, the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and that green that's growing that also is above ground is a big part of what's absorbing some of that extra. Isn't that kind of how it works?
Yeah. The more biomass we can grow, the more carbon we can store. And then we want the water that falls from the sky in the form of rain to leave through the plant. We don't want it to leave as runoff over the soil.
Right, right.
Into our streams, taking the soil and the nutrients with it. So, yeah, it definitely, the more biomass that we can grow, the more carbon we can store.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that I don't think this is one of the reasons I love talking to you guys, because, you know, as an urban dweller for most of my life, I had experience as a child and being on farms in Iowa with my, you know, my grandparents, but I think we lose a lot of connection to the food and how that food is grown and what happens when we're not, you know, farming in the right ways, and as far as the environmental impact of you know, the what's going on with heating up the planet, a lot of that comes, you know, what I got anyways from the documentary, and maybe you can tell me some things that that they missed here too. But, you know, that seemed like a big piece of things, that if that soil is well, then we have this whole cycle with rain, with carbon, everything kind of stays sort of within check. It's almost like that extra, you know, growth that's going on is a form of insulation, whether it's that topsoil layer or what grows out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. I think that it was so simply put in the documentary, that the quality of the soil is equal to the health of the human.
Yeah.
And how with the desertification that's happening on the lands, it leads to poor soil quality.
Yeah.
And poor soil is equal to poor people.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the immigration, the floods and the drought, the social breakdown that we see, it is all related to the fact that there are people across the globe that have lost the health of their soil.
Yeah.
And they're looking for, you know, more opportunity. And I just think until we figure that out, you know, it's.
And you mentioned, you know, some things that maybe they had missed. So as a farmer watching this movie the whole time,
yeah,
to be honest, I was kind of like, I don't know, a little bit torn, a little bit frustrated. I definitely give them like they did a very good job of getting the message across.
Yeah.
And you can't get into the weeds. It's really easy to get into the weeds and get off topic on this because it's such a broad topic. But like what I thought as a farmer watching it was, most farmers, and I say most, not all, but most farmers would love to do all these practices.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like I mentioned earlier, if I don't have a market for these alternative crops, or, you know, like, they really had an emphasis on livestock, which is, you know, like the biggest principle of soil health that we can talk about. It's super controversial because it's supposedly cows are the problem,
right,
but really
right,
they also are the solution if it's done right. And if we don't have a market for those livestock, we just can't be competitive like we talked about earlier.
Right.
So at that point, it's kind of out of the hands of the farmer.
I totally understand that. And it's interesting because I'm basically what is probably called, you know, an integrative health field now. I mean, we keep changing the name, you know, but it used to be alternative health or holistic health or whatever. It keeps kind of, you know, changing. But the one thing, you know, I work in a field that's very specialized. Craniosacral therapy is a kind of osteopathic method. But it's very similar to sort of working, you know, within a larger system of health, you know, in the same way that it would be probably to be a regenerative farmer in a big ag world, right? And it's,
yeah,
you know, it's hard because I'm in the same situation. I've really just sort of adapted to my communities and trying to figure out what does the community need from me. My education has sort of grown based on the needs of the communities that I've been in. So, you know, when I was in New York, when I first got there, I was working with a lot of people with sort of chronic back pain and doing some work in athletics and sports performance stuff too. But then as I moved into another community, there was a big need for work with babies, new mothers, new families. And so my whole practice kind of shifted a little bit more. And since I've been in Minneapolis, I've been more connected with a few different fields. One is dentistry, and another is working with people with toxicity issues, with trauma, and autistic children, and people who have been, you know, struggling with issues from Lyme. And, you know, the interesting thing about each of these, you know, little subdivisions is that I'm not able to coordinate as well as I'd like to with the bigger systems, because there's no method for us to sort of, you know, grow these things together. So it's just so much extra time on my part a lot of times, conversations with people, trying to develop these relationships, lots of meetings that I don't get paid for, but that's the only way that I feel like the right quality of care can happen.
In a sense, you're finding markets, but you have to build them. You have
yes,
to help.
Exactly, exactly.
You have to help create them, and that's
pretty much what you're doing, right?
The same thing. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that I'm finding for myself in this is that I think I'm getting, you know, more and more of an instinct for other people who even, you know, different doctors who have basically kind of said, I'm going to slip out of my, whatever my traditional hat was, because I'm a pediatrician, but I'm really interested in functional medicine and more, you know, nutraceutical type, you know, care, because the drugs weren't working for these conditions that I was working on anyway, so I'm going to become more specialized in a direction. But then, you know, they basically have to do what I'm doing too. And then we fall outside of the insurance system, which then limits where, you know, how we can provide that care too.
Well, with farming, so like some crops that I grow, I can't buy crop insurance on.
Yeah.
You know, like the currency is just an example. It's so new, the benefits are insane. As far as building soil, it's a perennial. But as far as buying crop insurance for it, I'm not able to even buy crop insurance for it. So I plant these crops without any insurance behind me, and then planting these crops without a market yet, because unless I have something to bring to market, nobody can use it yet.
Yeah.
So you're really just planting these things and hoping that somebody out there somewhere will kind of jump on board with you and keep the process going forward.
Are there any new markets happening within agriculture besides like soybeans, yeah, corn, and hay, which are like all basically used to feed, you know, cattle for the most part, right?
Right. Yeah. Alternative markets like Kernza is a big one that I think is going to be commercialized on a national level.
Okay. What is Kernza used for?
Yeah, right now it's, you know, I think a big market is going to be for local breweries.
Ah.
We're in discussion with company Patagonia,
mm-hmm,
and they're starting a beer called Long Root Ale. They'll be using it in a Kernza granola bar eventually. And there's a cracker company that's using it. It makes really good pancakes. And then, you know, adding that perennial and a different crop adds diversity. And then just all around, it just helps everything that we're doing. But yeah, anyway.
Okay. with Patagonia, you mean the clothing company Patagonia or...
Yeah, their food line is Patagonia Provisions.
Okay.
And yep, they're starting to make, and one of the labels that they're starting to work on is ROC label. So it's Regenerative Organic Certified. And that's a certification that me and Ellie are working on the farm too. So okay, it's just, they're just more standards, and you have to look at all aspects of your farm, social, economically, and environmentally.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
More transparency.
Or we should anyways. We should all be doing this.
Yeah.
So Allie, you're sort of between these fields then you're so involved in both of these. I'm sure that there's got to be something there's got to be some kind of thread here that's starting to kind of grow for you in terms of how you're thinking about helping people improve their health then too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think just as we had said before, you know, I think that the health of the soil is just so directly correlated with the health of the people.
Yeah.
And we talked about the gut microbiome, but even in terms of just like the community, you know, and the opportunity for people,
yeah,
with or without opportunity for people comes mental health, you know, it comes social connection,
yeah,
education, and it's all definitely combined when you look at the big picture.
Absolutely. That's kind of what I've been exploring with the podcast. I mean, in a nutshell, you just basically said it, because like I can't think, you know, with our environment not being in a good place, we're not going to get the right kind of nutrient in the food. We're going to, you know, that means the community that this is, you know, nearest to is also going to struggle. And you see, I mean, you know, just from now working in different communities, you know, through my career, you see the impacts of these kinds of things, you know, with the people too. And so I can't help but feel like, you know, people need to be educated a little bit more. And is that something that you do you talk about any of the food related things with your patients?
I do. Yeah, I definitely do. I think that, and I don't mean to like get political with this conversation, but I think that such a big issue in our nation when we talk about just like health on a cultural and a national scale is the fact that health insurance comes through employment for mm-hmm. so many people.
Yeah.
And so for people to, you know, have that coverage, they end up being so controlled in a sense by their employer, you know, like their ability to have the time and the freedom to source local food, let alone grow their own food or, you know, be able to find access to healthy food. I just think that like it's all related. And if we put everybody somehow on the same playing field, you know, that everybody got the same quality of healthcare, no matter who they were in this country, that we would just open up the floodgates for possibilities in terms of people to eat better and to have time to exercise and connect with their families.
Yeah.
And you know, for there to be entrepreneurship and small businesses and creativity and culture back again, you know, I think that is, if there's one thing, I just think that like our healthcare system right now in the way, like you said, insurance works and how it isn't favorable for some of our integrative approaches.
Yeah.
So many times get to the root cause of the problem. When we talk about diet and we talk about, movement and some of these things, as opposed to so much of what I see on my side of the fence, as a nurse practitioner in a rural health clinic, which is just like a lot of prescription medicine, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that that's part of what led me to, back to school for nurse midwifery. I hope to be done in about a year with my program. And, as a nurse practitioner and a nurse midwife, I just like, I'm looking forward to, really trying to make an impact like at the very beginning, you know, for young families, like preconception counseling on nutrition and, you know, the prenatal work that we can do, lactation and breastfeeding counseling and, just helping families to get a good start right from the beginning is just like my dream job. So,
I'm so excited for you. I mean, I've been around it now for about 15 years. And I've been involved in some of the pre, you know, sort of workshops around education, understanding how to build a, you know, sort of support system around yourself, why breastfeeding is important, you know, what you can do to make it a positive, you know, experience and that kind of thing. I feel the same way. It's crucial. I also think that it's a lot of times where you can really make impact even for the parents at that point, because you know, I find a lot of, you know, parents, they may have been sort of, you know, more active and healthy when they were younger, then they got a little deeper into their careers and they got married and the, you know, the overwhelm starts to kind of kick in, and to have somebody right there at that moment to be your sort of, you know, support system and help keep you sort of, you know, checked in and on track. And this is where I think the integrative approach would be so nice, is that, and I build these, you know, bridges a lot of times just because I know that I can educate people, but I also try to like help them understand who the other people in the community are that they could also sort of have on their side. And then I feel like I'm making an impact on the entire ecosystem of the family too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you have any idea about what you're going to do with this new, what your new balance will look like between being, you know, with being a midwife and doing nurse practitioner?
Yeah. I mean, I love my patients so much that I take care of right now. And so I'm not going anywhere for them. I mean, I'm still going to be here, but I think that, you know, as I continue, I think that my focus might just shift a little bit, you know, in terms of being a midwife, it might focus a little bit more on women's healthcare. And with that nurse practitioner background, family nurse practitioner background, I'm going to be able to, you know, just take care of the whole family, which I think is so rewarding, you know.
Do you have any thoughts about what could potentially change in our systems, or do you see anything sort of down the road a little bit that might help the impact of, you know, people being able to have more access to some other integrative approaches, or to be able to be better educated through, you know, a relationship with someone in a health system, insurance-based system?
I think that it's going to take work on a policy level, Jeremy.
I think so too.
I think that you and I, like, we definitely are like-minded in that we bring that holistic approach to our practices, and we try to surround our patient with everybody on the team that we feel like would, you know, benefit the patient. But, but at the end of the day, you know, if you have a high deductible insurance plan and you just can't afford the physical therapy, you know, or the chiropractic treatment or whatever, like it's a barrier.
Yeah.
So many times. And I feel like in primary care, especially, I tell people I'm the jack of all trades and the master of none, or I know a little bit about everything. And so yep. I feel like I can do a decent, like, surface level job addressing the big picture.
Yeah.
But I am at the end of the day, like, the hub of that spoke wheel. And my job is really to, like, help coordinate care for people.
Yeah.
And try to just, you know, empower people, you know, with that education to make good choices. And, but yes, back to your original question, I do think that at the end of the day, like I said, I hope that we can come to a place where, as a nation, we recognize that healthcare needs to be a human right for all people.
Yeah. So this is just coming up as I'm hearing you talk, but, you know, I've been thinking a lot more about, having done the podcast for the last 4 years, one of my reasons for starting it was really to sort of, like, improve access to resource for, you know, people who are actually, you know, at first I thought I was sort of appealing more to health practitioners. And then I started realizing that there were a lot more people who were not health practitioners listening to the podcast, and that this wasn't over people's heads. And I tried to keep it, you know, the language as simple as possible, because honestly, even between, you know, health fields, we don't have a very good way of common language, really, sometimes, of being able to communicate with each other. You know, if you don't know anything about fascia and we're working on an orthopedic issue together, or if we're working on trauma together, it doesn't matter what it is. We need to be able to speak the same language. So is there anything that you could, you know, that you could think of from your experience that you think people are in need of in terms of resource at this moment?
I think it's the food, Jeremy. Like, I think that is where it starts. It's just, to be able to source good food. I feel like I am in a very privileged place living on a farm and having a lot of connections to, we subscribe to a couple different CSAs. You know, we source our fish from, you know, like this very ethically fished, sustainable fishing company. It's called Sitka Salmon Shares.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're very mindful about where we buy all of our meat. Like, I buy our dairy is organic valley dairy. Like, I'm super mindful, like so many people are, about where they're spending their food dollars. But the fact of the matter is that, like, some people just, they don't know about it. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't know about the importance of, you know, the carrot that you can buy from the grocery store versus the carrot that I can buy from Davis and Tobin. But I also have to, like, keep at a decent temperature in my garage so that it doesn't, you know, get wilty on me.
Right.
You know, all that it takes a lot of time and effort to not only, like, obtain healthy food, but then to cook healthy food. And I just think that, like I had alluded to earlier, the way that our society does healthcare, in that you have to be, like, you have to sell a part of your soul to your employer in order to get your healthcare. For so many people, it just means working 40 plus hours a week and not having the flexibility, you know, to be able to do the work of the food prep and all of that. But I think that trying to eat, you know, organic food, I really do believe that that's important. And it's not just because I'm an organic, you know, very good organic farmer, but, you know, the amount of the residual pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, just, you know, when you dig into the research on residual glyphosate and some of the preservatives in our processed foods, There's no wonder that we see an increase with autism, and we see an increase with our, anxiety, depression, suicide rates, substance abuse. I mean, the list goes on and on, but I guess if you were to ask me one thing, I would just say it starts with the food.
Yeah, I agree.
I would say that it starts with the land.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, and not in the in the respect of what we've been talking about previous, but like standing on the dirt, like or sitting on the dirt, or being on dirt on the earth, like, and experiencing it, brings a lot of mental health, I think, also, which will lead better decisions, and just being okay with yourself, like, it's. It's nice to be able to get outside and have space where you can, think about things and, think about where you're headed next and try to figure out what it is you're doing and why it is you're doing it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's exactly one of the things I was thinking about when I was watching this. There's, because I do some work with like talk therapy and stuff too, like I end up with in a lot of these conversations where when we're talking about some of the things that people are suffering from, sometimes it's because they have a really poor relationship with themselves, sort of starting with that primary thing. And so I'll often talk to people about this, about, being mindful of your thoughts and that inner dialogue and what's going on with those kinds of things. But then after I was watching this documentary, I wrote down a note about how, we have to really develop our relationship with the planet. And that's the one thing we aren't really that engaged with, most of us. And, you guys are, clearly. But there's something that's almost, in terms of purpose, like what you're talking about, Luke, I think that's where that source of our sense of purpose comes from is, that is really the interconnected piece that pulls it all together is what's our relationship with the planet that we're, getting nourished by.
And one thing that we aren't addressing is access to that land. We're fortunate. We grew up around it. My parents own land, which led us into renting from more neighbors. We don't own any farmland ourselves, but we did grow up in this community. Mm-hmm. If you came in from outside of this community, I would almost say you have zero chance as far as accessing any land.
Yeah.
Because of the capital that it takes
to
rent it and the capital that it takes to farm it. So that is an issue upon itself. That is a long conversation and I don't have any answers, but there's opportunity there. I think the opportunity is growing as far as growing food and becoming a small scale farmer. But at the same time, I think that is an unrealistic expectation to ask somebody to start from scratch on a piece of land and start growing food and try to be profitable. Just because of things like of what healthcare costs, that alone, like you guys were talking about, it's over. Like you can't even get started. And there's a lot of books out there and there's a lot of Netflix series and stuff about like, Another documentary was The Biggest Little Farm. And as a farmer watching that, it's like, man, you got one pig.
Right.
So that alone was, it's a good movie and it gets the point across as far as, what the earth could be like.
Yeah.
And what our communities could be like, what our farms could be like. But if we aren't competitive with the existing model, we'll never get there.
Yeah.
So, like different ethnic groups coming into farming, the challenges are immense.
And I think at the policy level, like you were saying, Allie, I think we have to get back to a point where we're actually like, that's the only way we're going to make some, wholesale big shift is if we start looking at this and saying, who can we support to make this, if this is really both an environmental and health issue, those policy pieces, the science is there, I think. I don't think there's too many questions at this point. the changeover into something else obviously takes money and time, but I think you have to start with some policy, you know, fairly quickly. And yeah, maybe not everybody can get in the game, but I think it's important to start thinking about who we can help support to get into the game, and really look at what the outcomes are with those people who have already been doing it and support. I mean, just watching it, I started thinking, how could someone support, you know, Peterson Farms, who is probably getting fed by, you know, some you know, degrees of separation to the work that you're doing. I mean, that's the kind of thing I think that needs to happen. And I'm not exactly sure if that's something that can happen just in some kind of community-oriented way. I feel like the policy is still a ways off, but I'd like to see these things move a little faster. So do you guys have any experience with that? Or I'm sure this has been a conversation for you guys.
Yeah, I think that meaningful change, doesn't it always seem to start at the grassroots level?
Right,
like it starts by people just like making shifts in their day-to-day choices. Like we were talking about where you're spending your food dollars. And yes, it is going to take more time and energy upfront, but you know, it's going to be more expensive upfront, but the cheap food, I would argue the costs, you know, way away the expense upfront.
Yeah, the externalities of cheap food, you know, that's where the costs really come. But I see the government as a follower. I don't see them as a leader.
Okay.
From where I stand with as far as farming. They love to use terms like regenerative and soil health and all this stuff in the policy that they write.
Sounds nice.
Sounds so nice. But when you go in and... It's just that what they're trying to do is solve a problem on a national level. And every farm is very different from one another. I can have one farm that is 100 yards from the other one. It can be one fence line away, and it should be farmed completely different. So we have the same policy that is stretched over the entire country, where you have rangeland that should be grazed that is now being plowed up to plant corn because of the subsidies that go along with planting corn.
Yeah.
So it is throwing everything off in every which way possible.
Yeah.
And then like the grassroots level, if you look at a business like Bakersfield Flour and Bread or the Food Building in Northeast Minneapolis, what they're doing there is grassroots. I mean, they put a mill in a warehouse and we started delivering wheat to them and they started milling it. And then they started making bread with it and selling loaves of bread one at a time. Like that is as grassroots as you get, where you carry a bucket of wheat up in a mill, watch it mill, and then turn it into a loaf of bread. Meanwhile, General Mills is running millions of pounds of flour a day.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, if that is such a good example, I feel like, as far as how business can kind of change things for people that want change.
Yeah.
If you want that change, that's probably a good place to go spend your food dollars.
Gotcha.
You know, and like if, and that's just one of the places, just an example.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like that creates real change because that allows me to plant small grains. And I'm one of the only farmers that has small grains in my rotation because of a business like that.
Yeah.
And that adds to the diversity. And we're a small farm. They're a small mill, but that's the point, is to have a lot of small farms and a lot of small businesses.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. And you know, it's part of the reason why I want to make sure that you guys stay part of this conversation, because I see all the work you guys are doing. And, you know, I think it's important. One of the things I've, you know, really wanted to start pushing more into with the podcast is who these communities of people are. I want to make sure that people see, you know, what the kind of work that you're doing. You guys also, I love the fact that you're doing these Instagram posts and these live videos of you guys out in the field. So it just like warms my heart. Just to look on there and also see your kids kind of, you know, riding around with you and doing all these things too. But I think, you know, what you were saying earlier, Luke, I think there's something about just being on the land and developing a relationship with it, as you're talking about. And one of the things I've been doing through the pandemic is going on hikes on Saturdays with some friends. So those, like, you know, one of the more safe ways we can hang out right now, and just being outside. And I haven't spent this much time, which is like, it's crazy that this is something I haven't taken advantage of. But, you know, the Minneapolis-St. Paul area is just all lakes and rivers and park systems. There's so much of it. And we've gotten to see so many different places. And just to be out in it for, you know, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours on the weekend, just really, you know, immersed in it, I feel like it's been a huge mental health thing for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know you guys are quite busy, and I'll make sure that people have links to all your stuff, and you know, stay in touch and keep up with us. Let us know what's happening.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you for having us on.
The pleasure has been ours, Jamie. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, you guys.
Take care.
Luke and Allie Peterson, folks. Every time I talk to these two, I feel a little better. I feel inspired to become more connected to the land and the food. And I'm hoping that by having these conversations, we might all make more informed decisions regarding our health and our choices. Let me know what you thought of this topic in conversation. You can reach out to me through the website on the contact page. That's highway2.health. And while you're there, take a look around. And if you feel the resource that we provide here has a value and you'd like to see this project grow, consider becoming a supporter of the show, which you can also do right there on the front page. There's a button right at the top of the website. And if you'd like to learn more about Peterson Farms and their offerings, check out aframefarm.com. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet, especially the topsoil. Be well, my friends.